This episode of the Quantum Space Innovating Trust podcast is brought to you in association with VBOO Systems, pioneers in software protection, licensing, and long-term digital trust. Quantum computing is no longer theoretical, and it poses a fundamental challenge to today's cryptography. Methods like RSA and ECC will not survive the quantum era. With its next code meter generation, VBOO Systems is already preparing a smooth, compatible transition to post-quantum-ready security across hardware, software, and cloud licensing. Discover how CodeMeter is being engineered for the post-quantum future, and why preparing early is the only safe strategy. Visit VBOO.com/PQC today.
And welcome back to Season 3 of Innovating Trust, the podcast from the quantum space. For many years, biometric characteristics such as our voice, face, and behavior have been treated as powerful indicators of identity. They offered something passwords could not, signals associated with the person rather than something the person simply knew or possessed. In 2012, my guest today, Clive Summerfield, gave a TEDx talk built around the idea that my voice is my password. Now, 14 years later, we're entering a world in which a voice itself can be manufactured, a face can be generated, behavior can be imitated, and telephone numbers and email addresses can be spoofed or compromised. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean biometrics have become useless. It does mean that the assumptions surrounding them have changed. The question is no longer simply whether someone can reproduce the signal we expect. It's whether the wider evidence surrounding the interaction can still be trusted. So today, we're looking beyond conventional authentication and asking whether digital trust now has to become more continuous, contextual, and evidence-based. If every visible characteristic can potentially be reproduced, what remains trustworthy, and how should organizations respond without making legitimate users prove themselves every few seconds? That is also the problem Farex is trying to address. Founded in 2022 by a team with more than 30 years of experience in biometrics consulting and technology research and development, the company has developed a patented AI-powered approach that combines voice and face recognition. Its technology brings together speaker recognition, speech recognition, and facial recognition to assess both what is being said and who is saying it. The company is already operating across more than 40 banks worldwide and is working with global technology partners, while the underlying approach can be applied wherever organizations need to authenticate employees or customers, from financial services and retail to healthcare, education, and gaming. Joining me is Clive Summerfield from Farex, who spent many years thinking about voice, identity, and authentication, and is now working on how trust can be assessed when individual signals can no longer stand alone. Clive, welcome to Innovating Trust.
Yeah. Hi there, Steve.
Perhaps the best place to begin is with how much the underlying assumptions have changed. In 2012, voice authentication represented a very different idea of what could count as reliable evidence of identity. So looking back from 2026, how has your thinking changed since the idea of my voice is my password?
Well, I think that my voice is my password is still a valid concept. The threat to my voice is my password have evolved and developed over the past 10 years or 12 years since that TEDx talk. But voice still remains a very powerful biometric identifier and provides the basis for many of the verification processes that are used to validate people accessing customer service in particular And particularly in regulated industries such as banking, financial services, government services, and so on. The threat to voice, of course, have evolved significantly over the intervening period, and so has the modality of communications. Back in 2012, the majority of customer service was conducted over the telephone, of course, which is a voice-only channel. And in those circumstances, the only way you can biometrically verify an individual is actually from their voice characteristics. So at the time, I mean, voice has always provided a very powerful business process. I mean, it really offers businesses a four-way value proposition, as well as being a highly secure process. That is, it is that it is indeed as unique, if not more unique, than your fingerprint. Voice also provides you with an ability, certainly in a business context, to make call centers and customer service more efficient. You don't actually have to ask questions and wait for responses. So the act of verification is much more efficient. And from the caller's perspective, they don't actually have to remember PINs, passwords, and all these other items that are, clearly very difficult for many people to remember. And, funnily enough, there's also a privacy enhancing aspect here, because if I don't have to disclose my name, address, telephone numbers, and dates of birth and other personally identifiable information to validate my identity, then I can actually remain anonymous in that environment. There's no need for the customer service agent in those environments to actually know my real name. I just need to know that my voice as a biometric attribute is actually the biometric attribute that owns this particular account or this particular has this particular authority to access this service.
If people today hear that a voice can be cloned, they often assume voice biometrics have become obsolete. Is that an accurate conclusion?
No, that's not an accurate conclusion. I mean, I think in many ways it's right, because traditional voice biometric systems, certainly the legacy voice biometric systems that you hear in traditional telephone services, are defeated by synthetic voice. So it is very definitely a threat to traditional voice biometric systems. But voice biometrics is in itself an AI technology. And as an AI technology, it can be trained and can learn the acoustic attributes of synthetic voice. Now, these attributes are very subtle. I mean, but you can train models, and we've actually done this. We've trained models that recognize the difference between a synthetic voice and a naturally spoken voice. And so there are defenses against these emerging threats of cloned voice. And the cloned voice domain is a little bit more complicated than just simply cloning an individual. Many of the synthetic voice interactions that you actually see in a customer service are actually generated from essentially a set of relatively standard voices, which are often the voices you hear on TikTok and YouTube clips. And the majority of synthetic voice attacks are actually performed using these standard voices, which are actually very, very straightforward for voice biometric systems to detect and to label as synthetically generated voice interactions.
So it's not necessarily that biometrics have no value. If we do have things like synthetic voices, it's that there's no single observable characteristic that can carry a full burden of trust when increasingly convincing versions of those characteristics can now be generated, copied, or manipulated by AI.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, certainly the legacy voice biometric systems have no defense against these synthetic or cloned voices. But the new generation of voice biometric systems that have been trained to detect synthetic voice are actually quite reliable at detecting the difference between a synthetic voice and a real voice. And this is particularly important, not just at the verification stage, but also at the registration. So remember that all biometric systems, you need to register a template on the system to start with. And then thereafter, you then verify your identity against that template that has been registered on the system. And the big danger with synthetic voices is not just in the verification process, but also in the initial registration process, where essentially synthetic identities are registered on these systems. Which then can be used for various nefarious purposes. There was quite a lot of stats around what the regulator thinks is the number of false bank accounts being established using synthetic voices and synthetic IDs, for example.
Well, if that's the case, you've got voice, face, behavior, email addresses, and telephone numbers, and they can all be forged or manipulated. So let me ask you, what actually remains trustworthy?
Well, in reality, the combination of those is what remains trustworthy. Biometric systems, and for that matter, any identity registration verification process, is essentially building building layers of evidence that we are actually, one, dealing with the individual they claim to be, and that individual is a live individual and not a synthesized individual. There is actually only one technology that actually binds, if you like, a biological identity to a digital identity, and that is biometric technologies. And the notion of synthetic voice detection, and for that matter, synthetic face detection, is almost becoming an obligatory capability that has to be embedded into these systems in order to make any registration or verification process reliable and to be trustworthy.
Are we reaching the end of passive identity, where organizations trust someone because they look, sound, or behave as expected?
I think we're rapidly reaching that point. I think that the emergence of AI, and it's a very powerful technology, and all the its ability to model human attributes and human behavior do actually create significant challenges for authentication systems. And I think the next generation biometric technologies with these capabilities to detect synthetic entities are becoming more and more important. And I think that over the next couple of years, it'll become obligatory to actually include synthetic voice detection in any of these types of biometric verification processes, because the capabilities of these systems is actually so it's so powerful. And humans, coming back to it, humans are not that good at discerning voices. One of the things that, having worked in the field of voice biometrics now for, approaching 25 years, I mean, voice biometrics as a technology is far better, far more accurate at verifying identity from voice analysis than a human actually is. So whilst humans find it difficult to discern the differences between a synthetic voice and a naturally produced voice, these biometric systems are far more sensitive, or can be trained to be far more sensitive to synthetic voices and the acoustic artifacts that are actually buried inside the signal that are generated by the synthesis algorithms.
Which assumptions about identity and authentication are organizations still getting wrong, bearing in mind everything that you've just said?
That's a very interesting question because there's the large majority of organizations are still reliant upon PINs and passwords and things that in order to grant access to secure services. We've actually seen, of course, the rise of biometric technologies such as face recognition in smartphones, and invariably to access banking services online, particularly on your mobile phone, those biometric systems are such as face recognition are almost default settings these days on those types of devices and access. But online, such as in a laptop or PC environment, there's a reliance on PINs and passwords, and on this second factor authentication process where you are sent a one-time password via SMS or other means. And these techniques are rapidly becoming obsolete. They're not particularly strong. They don't determine liveness of an individual. That is that these types of capabilities don't determine that you're actually dealing with a live entity in any way whatsoever. It's only biometric technologies that actually bind, if you like, a biological identity to a digital identity. And voice and face are really the only two biometric modalities that are available in an online world. So you've got a situation where voice and face, which naturally go together. I mean, I use the line that voices come from faces. Where else do they come from? And therefore, it makes sense to actually combine voice and face biometric recognition as a multi-factor biometric authentication mechanism.
But you say multi-factor. Are you in fact talking about continuous verification?
If you look at the way humans verify and recognize each other, we're talking over a Zoom call here, and I'm recognizing you, Steve, from the image and from the voice that is emanating from the face image that I see. So I am continuously verifying that I'm actually talking to Steve over a Zoom call. And so the notion of continuous verification is something that humans do all the time. And I think that where we're moving to is a modality of continuous verification in online services. I think the notion that if you verify at the start of a session that you are then the same person throughout the session, that's a very poor assumption. Certainly voice and face biometric technologies provide you with an ability for continuous verification, a continuous notice that there is actually a person present at the screen interacting with a service, and that person is the same person throughout the session. If I was to disappear from this Zoom call and somebody else take over from the call, you would recognize that it was not me that was then speaking. And hence, you would know that this other person was not Clive that was speaking. So the notion of continuous verification, which is what we do as humans, I think, is going to become the default way in which online services behave and operate as a continuous verification process. They become very important for people that are, for example, working from home, making sure the person working from home is the same person working from home all the time in front of their computer. So that's one example of where continuous verification becomes important.
Let me give you a real-world scenario. A customer walks into a bank or a service provider. The voice appears to match the customer, the telephone number looks correct, and the caller looks or knows personal information associated with that particular account. Now, taken separately, each signal appears credible. The organization nevertheless needs to decide whether the interaction is genuine or whether confidence is changing, and at what point additional verification or escalation becomes necessary. So my question to you, Clive, is that in that scenario, how would continuous evidence-based verification distinguish a genuine customer from a convincing synthetic or manipulated identity?
Well, it's very difficult unless you actually have technologies that have been specifically developed to detect the synthetic cloned entity. The way customer service works at the moment, and I had to phone customer service at the bank just the other day, given that I'm actually overseas at the moment, and you know, it was a traditional approach. You know, what's your name, account number? Tell us a transaction that has appeared on your account. Or it's very, very mundane and quite frustrating from a customer's point of view. I mean, the amount of, the evidence that they actually have that it is me is very shallow in that example. And if I was a bad actor, I mean, you know, there's all sorts of things that could have transpired. So, I think that those days are numbered. The notion of continuous verification becomes important. It's much more difficult for a synthetic entity to maintain a convincing interaction. So that's one of the things. And when you actually have technology that is actually tuned to detect synthetic voice, and for that matter, synthetic image, then the interactions become far more reliable. And evidence that you provide, such as name, address, and so on, just becomes supportive information of the biometric information, which is being presented and verified as being from a live individual as opposed to being synthetically generated.
Well, this moves the conversation away from treating identity as a single credential or biometric and towards treating trust as an accumulation of evidence. The practical challenge is deciding which evidence matters, how it should be combined, and how quickly the trust assessment should change when something no longer fits. So Clive, here's my question to you. Is the future of digital trust less about proving who someone is at one specific moment, and now more about evaluating the evidence supporting their claim throughout an entire interaction?
I think it's very, very much the latter. I think that trust develops over an interaction. So at the start of an interaction, you actually have a relatively low level of trust. You actually have these biometric signals, you have voice and face as you actually have the conversation. And then as the conversation progresses, you have more evidence. You actually accumulate more and more evidence, both biometric evidence and, for that matter, factual evidence such as names, addresses, if you want to actually augment the biometric verification signal. So the notion of continuous verification, particularly when you're now starting to interact not just with human agents, but also with chatbots. So the notion of interacting with a chatbot, which to all intents and purposes is interacting with you as if it was a human agent. It's an artificial, it's an AI chatbot, in effect, that's interacting with you. Continuous verification becomes, in those circumstances, I think, as a mandatory process. And I should mention at this point that these interactions are frictionless in the same way as you're verifying me and I'm verifying you over this call, this interaction. This is a continuous process and it's frictionless. That is, you don't actually have to interrupt me. You're basically analyzing what I look like and what I sound like and the information I'm providing. as a collection of evidence that I am actually who I claim to be, and I have the authority to perform actions such as transfer funds or access particular services or access information, whatever the process might be.
Where does Pharex fit within this model? What problem is it designed to solve that traditional biometrics approaches may miss?
Well, Pharex is based on the fact that we've been developing algorithms that fuse voice and face recognition together as a unified algorithm. Comes from the from kind of my previous comment that voices come from faces, and that voice and face recognition go together as almost like a unified multi-factor biometric authentication. I mean, as humans, we learn voice in the context of face. As infants, we stare into our parents' faces and we hear these voices emanating from these faces. And whenever you're, often when you're interacting on things like telephone services where you can't see the other party, you can only kind of guess what they look and sound like. You almost like visualize who the other party is from the voice interaction. So, you kind of guess that the person is male and of a certain age and so on, which from the just from the acoustic signal, from the acoustics of the voice that you're actually hearing. So voice and face from a psychological point of view in human recognition are very, very tightly bound together. And Pharex's unique technology is all about fusing voice and face recognition together as this continuous multi-factor authentication mechanism that can be used in a wide range of services to provide much stronger verification of an individual in an online service. So it's particularly, we're particularly interested in how this can be applied in things such as secure chatbots, for instance. That's one area where we're particularly interested in looking how Pharex can be applied.
The same technologies making synthetic identities easier to create can also help organizations analyze more evidence and detect inconsistencies at a speed human teams just cannot match. Now, that creates a new question. How much of the trust decision should be automated and what safeguards are needed around it? So, Clive, let me ask you, are we moving towards an AI versus AI contest in identity protection? And how should organizations preserve accountability, privacy, and human oversight?
Well, very definitely. I mean, it actually has become a technological war between AI to defeat AI. The rise of synthetic voice, which is only one angle of AI generated cybersecurity threats, are becoming incredibly powerful and widespread. And the rise of them is very rapid. And in effect, the only way to defeat AI is actually with AI that is trained to defeat AI. So in effect, we're in a bit of an arms race between AI, cybersecurity AI to on the attack and cybersecurity AI to defeat those attacks. And synthetic voice detection, along with things such as synthetic face detection, are part of the part of that armory of cybersecurity technologies that certainly large organizations need to look at in order to make sure that they are protected from these emerging AI cybersecurity threats.
I have a final question for you, Clive. If artificial intelligence eventually becomes capable of perfectly reproducing every observable and auditory human biometric, what does identity look like after biometrics?
Right, very interesting question. Very interesting question. It assumes that AI will get there in being able to replicate human attributes in a perfect way. One of the, coming back to it, I mean, Going back to kind of one of my comments earlier on, humans are not necessarily that good at discerning the difference between, certainly between synthetic voice and natural voice. I mean, synthetic voice has come a long way from the, the very quirky synthesizers of the 1990s and 2000s. It is now becoming quite difficult for human agents to tell the difference between synthetic voice and natural voice. But as I was saying, training the AI algorithm, which is a continuous process, of course, we continuously train the algorithms to hone in on those acoustic artifacts, which essentially give away the synthetic nature of the voice. We as humans don't perceive these artifacts, but the models that we train within the PhyrEx system are trained to detect those artifacts. I think that one is that, continuous training and continuous evolution of synthetic voice detection, and for that matter, synthetic bass detection, becomes obligatory. But you're right. I mean, it is a major danger for certainly for people acting online. How do they determine the difference between am I human on this side of the on this side of the camera, or am I a synthetic entity that is wanting to gain access to various services? Now, I should point out at this point that the big rise here is, of course, in agentic AI, which of course is agents that are operating on a acting legitimately on behalf of a real human to actually then go and perform various tasks. And I think there's an awful lot of work to be done on actually how you go about validating that an agentic AI agent actually does have the authority from the real human account holder to actually perform some of the tasks that it's being requested to perform. So I think we've got a very dynamic time ahead of us in this whole area on detecting synthetic voice, not just as a threat, a cybersecurity threat, but also in order to tell the difference between a real human making a request and an agentic AI making a request using synthetic voice. But on behalf of a real human, if you get my drift, how that works.
Is there anything practical that organizations can do to protect themselves at the moment?
Deploying synthetic voice detection within their telephony and voice services is something very practical that they can do. We've been having conversations with telecommunication carriers, for instance, to talking to them about how we can potentially embed this capability within things such as the telephone voice network. It basically gives a heads up to anyone receiving a call that this call is actually a human or potentially a synthetic cloned voice. Now that could be incredibly useful flag that a telecommunications carrier could forward on to the receiving party, particularly if that receiving party is things like a government service, maybe emergency services, and so on. That, you can imagine scenarios where emergency services become flooded with synthetic voice requests, and actually having synthetic voice detection built into the telephone network to provide the receiving party with a heads up that this is actually synthetic voice and not real voice could be an incredibly useful value-added service that the telco carriers could provide.
The message I'm taking from this discussion is not that biometrics are disappearing. Voice, face, and behavior may continue to contribute to an identity decision, but they can no longer be treated as unquestionable proof on their own. Trust is becoming more dynamic, supported by context, evidence, and continuing assessment, rather than granted permanently after a single successful authentication event. Forex provides one practical example of that transition, but the wider story is the changing nature of digital trust itself. So Clive, I want to thank you for joining us and for helping us explore what trust may look like after biometrics.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. And I hope that's been useful this morning for yourself and for your listeners.
That concludes this episode of Season 3 of Innovating Trust. You can follow the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube Music, and Pocket Casts, or you can find the episode and supporting coverage at thequantumspace.org. So until next week, goodbye, and thank you for listening.
This was The Quantum Space, Innovating Trust, produced and edited by Crown Communications.